The Outdoorsman Radio Show is brought to you by Ellis Outdoors, LLC. Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. Time again for the Outdoorsman Radio Show. Here are your hosts, Alan and Robin Ellis.
Hey, good morning, everybody. We're back here at the Outdoors and Radio Show. My name is Alan Ellis, and we have a couple guests with us this morning. Good morning, Josh. How are you?
Good morning, Alan. Doing well. Thank you.
Good, good, good. Josh, you've been a guest on our show before. Please introduce yourself and your cohort there, if you would.
Sure. My name is Josh Homiak. I work for the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, Wildlife and Heritage Service. I'm our game bird section leader, and we have our waterfowl project leader, Kayla Harvey, with us this morning, too.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Good morning, Kayla. How are you?
I'm good.
Good. I don't know if we've ever met. We may have at a meeting somewhere along the line, but I'm glad to have you with us here on the Outdoors and Radio Show, as well as you, Josh.
Thank you for having us.
Indeed, indeed. Josh and I have been talking a little bit off and on during the week, and we've got a lot of, even though the waterfowl season is almost coming to an end, we have a lot of things to discuss, don't we, Josh?
Yeah, we do.
First and foremost, let's get the bird flu, the avian influenza situation in Maryland addressed, and then we'll move on to something else.
Yeah, no, I think that's a good idea. That's an important one, not only for hunters and waterfowlers, but, an important industry in Maryland, the poultry industry. So
right,
working with our friends in the Department of Agriculture and the U.S. Department of Agriculture on some issues there with avian influenza.
Right. What is avian influenza?
Well, it's a virus, it's a flu virus. It's somewhat similar, to the human flu. Although this particular virus does not show much propensity to infect humans. There certainly have been some human cases, and it's been detected in a bunch of different mammal species, which is unusual for an avian influenza.
Yeah.
But, this particular strain has been around, at least in North America, for about 3 years.
Uh-huh.
Although this year we're seeing a few more dead birds reported, wild birds, and there have been some commercial and backyard poultry flocks affected in Maryland, Delaware, and Virginia, and really across the country. What we're seeing here is, it's unfortunate, but given what we're seeing across the rest of the country, I guess not terribly unexpected.
No. Now, everybody says, why are eggs so expensive? I paid $12.49 the other day for 18 eggs, and Robin almost fell out of her chair when I told her that. She said, "Why so much?" I said, "Well, it's number one, it was the market I chose, but number two, it has everything to do with avian influenza and the reduction of the chicken crops around the country. Very aggressive treatment of this is the only thing that I understand that can prevent it from spreading, and it requires, neutralizing any of the animals that are affected. But how do you do that in a wild flock? I mean, here's the anecdote, and you can take it from there. Chicken farm, their chicken coops, their 10 chicken coops were shut down. One of their three of their houses had chickens in them. They were all neutralized, and of course the entire place needs to be sterilized. But they also have a pond, and the snow geese were using the pond, found 137 snow geese that were collected by somebody, whether it's DNR, USA,
USDA.
USDA, yeah, or whoever. But those animals were removed. Now, they don't test 137 snow geese. They just collect them and get them out of the landscape, I'm assuming. Is that...
Yeah, you know, in a commercial setting, whether it's a broiler flock, which, of course, is chickens that are being raised for meat, or, you know, a layer flock, which is that's where your eggs are coming from.
Right.
You know, there's a huge commitment to keeping the virus out of the food supply.
It has to be.
By USDA.
Yes. Yeah, sure.
And the various state departments of agriculture and the growers themselves, you know, of course. And you know, like we said, it's not really a problem for human health, but you certainly don't want it to become a problem, you know.
Right.
And nobody wants to think that about their meat. So when they...
No, of course not.
Yeah, sure. The industry is constantly checking those commercial houses for avian influenza. And when they detect it in a commercial house, as you say, they depopulate that house and dispose of the animals and disinfect it. But in the wild population, that's just not possible.
Not possible at all. No.
Yeah. No, it's not.
I mean, I've got friends who hunt snow geese, and they'll get a flock coming into the decoys, and they'll see birds dropping out before the first, you know, before the first shot is fired. And to me, that's pretty serious stuff, you know.
Yeah, so. Snow geese seem to be taking it on the chin a little bit this year, but it's certainly, you know, there's reports in Canada geese and a few ducks.
Okay.
Too, you know, ducks tend to be more carriers. You know, they unless environmental conditions get bad enough that their immune system is kind of compromised, then some of these things that are sort of lingering in your system can bubble to the surface, and maybe
just
that's
like,
what we're seeing with snow geese. You know,
just like people can be carriers of a particular disease but not be affected by it. That's what you're saying.
Correct.
The ducks are doing that. How does it spread?
Yeah.
How does it spread from critter to critter?
Well, you know, feces and saliva and just being in close proximity, you know, to one another, just like it would spread between humans. It lasts a little bit longer in colder weather, which we know from the human flu virus, too. You know, what time of year is our flu season?
Is it an aerial virus? Or does it have to be contact?
No, it can be spread through the air, too.
Spread through the air.
You know, in the wild, that's probably a little bit more unusual circumstance, just because birds aren't typically confined, you know.
Right.
Might be in a poultry house, and that seems to be most of the, a little bit at sea here talking about the human infections. That's not my area of expertise. I'm not a doctor or a veterinarian.
Right, I got you.
Most of the human infections that I'm aware of have come from workers in poultry houses. You know, where you're just exposed to a lot of dust and probably just an extremely high viral load. You know, so that's a pretty, thankfully, for humans, it's a pretty unusual circumstance and something that's pretty easily mitigated through the use of PPE, you know, masks and suits and washing in and out of the facilities.
Got it.
Which is, you know, the message all these producers are telling each other and this various state and federal agencies, too. If you have commercial chicken flock, you know, to protect them from the virus that's lurking outside, you know, make sure you're implementing your biosecurity program and keeping the virus outside to the best of your ability, which I would say, given you know, the amount of chicken producers there are in Maryland and Delaware, you know, Eastern Shore in particular, they're doing a pretty good job given the relatively few facilities that have been impacted and how prevalent it appears to be in the wild bird flock this year. So it's like they're doing a pretty darn good job, really.
Sure. Kayla, what's your role when it comes to the avian influenza piece of the puzzle here? Are you involved in that at all?
Was that for me? Sorry.
Yep, that was you.
Okay. So we're connecting with USDA and the public health labs just to provide information about avian influenza and also guidelines for hunters to follow. And we're also helping out USDA with collecting any dead birds, helping out with the load there.
All right. Now, can you point to a site on the website of the DNR website or USDA website where people can get more information if they'd like to find out more about this, and particularly when it comes to hunting? I know that there is a page. Could you tell us where to find that in particular?
Yeah, so if you Google Maryland DNR avian influenza hunters, there's a page that comes up that links to a USDA site that has a lot of good information for hunters regarding avian influenza.
Yeah, the guidelines for handling the birds and things like that, wearing your gloves, wear your face mask, and that
right.
type of thing is all on there.
Yep.
So, yeah, and you know, here we are at the end of the season. We don't have the AP geese other than the and we don't have the duck season anymore, but we do have the resident goose season running for a few more weeks, and then we also have the conservation season for snow geese. So those people that participate in those, there is areas there for caution when it comes to handling birds, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. It's good to catch, you know, get yourself a copy of that thing and print it out and keep it in your bag so you have it. You know, you can't remember all that stuff, so mm-hmm. it's always a good thing. Clean, you know, if you're going to breast out a goose or something like that, clean the goose, so make sure you get your, you know, you clean your knives at the end of the day and
right.
you know, keep your hands washed.
Dispose of
your yeah. What is safe disposal for these for the carcasses once the animals are
So we're recommending double bagging any carcasses and placing it in the normal trash.
Normal trash, okay. That's
yeah.
you know, that's kind of what I did when I lived in Baltimore County. You just get a garbage bag that you couldn't see through. get some black garbage bags and double bag them and seal them up good and put them in the trash. I think that's an excellent idea, and let them go to the landfill like that. So
a lot of the advice on that sheet is, I mean, it's stuff we all should really be doing anyway.
Anyway,
not
sure.
Not only a guard against avian influenza, but just any wildlife borne disease that
yeah.
you know, hunters might be most likely, you know, common sense. Wash your hands, wear some gloves, throw your carcasses away.
Sure.
You know, it's nothing. Clean your knives.
Yeah, I mean, good common sense stuff. Got it.
Right.
Okay. All right, look, we're going to take our first commercial break here, and when we come back, let's talk about the proposed waterfowl season. We come back.
Yeah, okay.
We good with it? All right.
Good.
All right. Cool. Thanks. Hey, folks, you know, just asking, do you have that beautiful fireplace you never use? Well, we had one here in our back room that we never used. It was just a hole in the wall. It sucked all the heat out of the room. Well, we fixed that when we stopped by Hearth America at Backyard Billy's on Kent Island. They are the premier fireplace, stove, and hearth dealer in the region. After being disappointed at several other locations around Delmarva, we found Hearth America, and we selected an Enviro, Robin and I selected an Enviro EX35 gas fireplace insert. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's did all the installation. They helped us with the masonry work. They did the chimney, and they have provided us, just as late as last Saturday, with a friendly, knowledgeable follow-up and service. We both enjoy the convenience, the beauty, and the room-filling heat from our gas fireplace insert. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's carries Enviro, Regency, and other top brands. Check out their freestanding wood and pellet stoves for your primary or alternative heat source. Select a new pellet, gas, electric, or wood insert from Hearth America at Backyard Billy's in Graysonville. Stop in the showroom soon so you will be ready for the chilly weather yet to come. You'll find their staff very friendly. You'll find them knowledgeable. You'll find the prices good. Visit BackyardBillies.com or the Hearth America Facebook page. That phone number, 410-827-4500. That's 410-827-4500. Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is open 7 days a week. Route 50, exit 44B, Evans Avenue, which takes you to Graysonville. Just get off the exit. Stay right, turn right on the first right, which is Drummer. If it's heat you want, Hearth America at Backyard Billy's is the fireplace. Now, Clyde Sports Shop, upcoming sale. Oh, I did talk to Clyde the other day. Here's what I want to tell you. Some of the Browning firearms have been advanced or discontinued, if you want to use that word. Some of those are the X-Bolt, the original X-Bolt, the original A-Bolt. The A-Bolt was replaced by the X-Bolt. The X-Bolt has now been replaced by the X-Bolt 2. Clyde Sports Shop has a great selection of those firearms in all calibers, the X-Bolt Medallion, the X-Bolt Hunter, and all the other X-Bolts as well. Those are bolt-action, high-powered, center-fire rifles in every caliber, every short magnum, every magnum, every short magnum. They have those. So if you're looking for a high-powered rifle and you don't see it on the shelf, ask Clyde if he has a Medallion or if he has a A-Bolt Hunter, if he has a standard A-Bolt in a certain caliber that you can take a look at, and he probably does. I also want to talk about the BAR, which is the Browning auto-loading rifle, the MK2 Safari Series. This is a beautiful firearm. If you like an auto-loader, the BAR MK2 Safari features a traditionally styled walnut stock, a hammer-forged barrel, polished blued and engraved steel receiver, reliable gas piston operation, and a detachable box magazine, available in both short and long calibers as well, the BAR. For all the Browning firearms from your full-line Browning dealer, visit Clyde Sports Shop, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, rifles, shotguns, and handguns. And that's in Lansdowne, Halethorpe, Baltimore, 21227. Clyde's has been around since 1957, 410-242-6108. That's 410-242-6108. ClydeSportsShop.com is the website. ClydeSportsShop.com. Just type in the name. All one word. Clyde's is open 7 days a week. For firearms, licenses, ammunition, scope mounting, and all accessories, it's Clyde's Sports Shop. You'll be glad you did. We'll be right back.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB, 2722, madonnaseafood.com.
Alan Ellis here for MilSpec Spray-On Truck Liners. MilSpec Spray-On Truck Bed Liners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bed liners on the market. And MilSpec liners support veterans and military families. Whether you're a hunter, crabber, angler, contractor, farmer, waterman, or weekend warrior, your MilSpec liner with a nationwide lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear. Tree stands, tackle boxes, crab pots, any kind of tools. Have your MilSpec liner installed at Superior Linings and Truck Accessories, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road in Glen Burnie. Call Bobby Hawkins at 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. And Maryland Spray Linings is just off Security Boulevard, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver. That number is 410-455-0800. 455-0800. These MilSpec liner dealers can install any truck accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. Schedule your appointment today to get your MilSpec liner installed.
Welcome to the 78th National Outdoor Show, Friday and Saturday, February 21 and 22 at 3485 Golden Hill Road, Church Creek, Maryland. The show opens Friday at 5 and Saturday at 9 a.m. Admission only $8 for adults and $4 per child. home of the World Muskrat Skinning Championship. You're now in muskrat country. The heartland of sportsmen, trappers, watermen, and wildlife. We're proud to show you the best that comes from our boot-sucking marshes and the flowing water that surrounds them. Most of all, we hope to share the unique spirit and character of our hardworking people who keep one foot in a technologically savvy world and the other stuck deep in our traditional old-school ways. Weekend of fun for the whole family, entertaining contests, educational exhibits, leisurely shopping for all, savor local seafood delicacies, muskrat cooked the old-fashioned way. Enjoy the heartland of Maryland, Dorchester County, Friday and Saturday, February 21, 22. See you at the 78th National Outdoor Show. Hey, for times and details, visit NationalOutdoorShow.org.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. And now, back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
Just a good old boys, never meaning no harm. Beats all you never saw, been in trouble with the law since the day they was born. Straightening the curves, flattening the hills. Someday the mountain might get them, but the law never will. Making their way the only way they know how. Well, that's just a little bit more than the law will allow.
All right. There we go. Just a little bit more than the law will allow. No waterfowl hunters in Maryland have ever been in that position, I can tell you that. We welcome back Kayla and Josh with Maryland Department of Natural Resources. Kayla, tell us your position again.
Waterfowl program manager.
You are the boss. Okay, I got that.
For waterfowl.
Yeah, for waterfowl. Got that. So we've got the proposed seasons that have been out there for a few days, or a few, couple of weeks, I guess. Is the comment period over yet?
The comment period opened on February 10th.
Oh, okay.
And then it will go till the 24th of February.
So people have, they can look that up online and comment as they would like to. So.
Correct. We put out a press release, and then
yes,
it's also linked on our web pages.
Got it. People want to look at the press release. Of course, I'm sure the biggest question is, why are you cutting back on the Atlantic population Canada geese numbers again, restricting the season to 30 days and one goose when it was just 45 days and two geese this year? And, of course, you know, it's always the federal guidelines. But the question that I'm hearing and I'm being asked is the difference between restrictive versus moderate when 88,500 breeding pair estimate was used as moderate. I'm sorry, 30 days. I meant 30, not 45. 30 days, two geese versus now restrictive, which is 30 days and one goose, with 50,000 more estimated breeding pairs, 133,500. Help us out with that one a little bit, if you can.
Yeah, I'll probably.
Go ahead, Josh.
Yeah, I might jump in there if you don't mind, Alan. Just have a little more history with the flyway and the process. And
I got you.
Thing. Yeah. So, maybe the best thing to do is just sort of to start out with the process, like in the summertime. You know,
sure,
what we look at, and you know, and I think we'll get to the answer you're looking for. If it's,
okay,
I get. Yep. Get too long-winded, you just have to jump in and chop me off.
as my wife always says to me when I'm telling her a hunting story, she'll say, come on, Alan, Reader's Digest version.
get to the point.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think, you know, a lot of people know.
I mean, tell me that was a reasonable question. I mean,
No, absolutely it is. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, no, absolutely it is. So, you know, in the summertime, in the AP Canada Goose world, or you know, late spring, early summer,
right?
They're nesting on their subarctic nesting grounds, which are, you know, about you measure it on Google Earth, it's about 1,500 miles north of Chestertown, 1,000 miles north of Montreal. So even you get as
they're way up there. Yep.
They're ways up there. You know?
Arctic Circle stuff.
Yeah, just below the Arctic Circle, but still it's mostly tundra, and you know, so that's where the Paris survey is flown. You know, there's sort of an area identified on the landscape as their primary breeding range.
Right.
There's transects that are flown in a fixed wing aircraft by observers every year, and breeding pair estimates developed, you know, from that flight, and then later on in the summer, those geese, their eggs are hatching kind of at the end of July, and banding crews head up there the first couple weeks of August.
Right.
To the adults and the young are flightless. The adults drop their flight feathers to grow new ones. They molt.
Right.
And so you can...
Same thing happens here when you're banding geese.
Correct. Yep. Just the timing is a little bit different. You know, we do it here. They're about 2 months behind our local geese, just due to the latitude they're working at.
Sure.
So, you know, that gives you a number of breeding, or an estimate of the number of breeding pairs for the year, and then banding. You know, of course, you get all the good data you get out of banding. But the other thing, maybe some people don't realize, is it gives you an estimate of what reproduction was like that year. You know, we call it productivity, because you have a ratio of the number of young to adults in that banded sample, so you can compare that, you know, from one year to the next.
Got it.
And that gives you an estimate of productivity for the year. So, this year, and then all that information is fed. There's an integrated population model. It's just a fancy mathematical formula that takes all this data that we collect on geese every year, and you dump it into this equation, and it allows you to spit out a population estimate. You can estimate a lot of different things. But we primarily use it is to generate an estimate. And Fish and Wildlife Service runs the model, and they generate an estimate of the number of breeding pairs for the following year.
Got it.
And the reason we're sort of stuck doing that, you know, in the old days, you remember, prior to 2016, you know, the data would have all been collected and processed in August at a flyway meeting, and seasons
came out late.
Immediately following, you know, would have, you know, but really what happened is the administrative burden within the federal government became such that we were in real danger of not being able to push out hunting seasons in time for the actual seasons, which nobody wants. You know, hunters want that. We states certainly don't want that, and neither does the Fish and Wildlife Service. So they started doing this year in advance thing. But having this IPM allows you to at least generate a prediction of what that breeding population might look like the following year. And I think This is getting to your original question that you asked kind of 2 hours ago.
But I'll ask it again, and then that'll bring everybody up to date.
The
marked difference of restrictive versus moderate seasonal comparison, the 88,500 breeding pair estimate was used as a moderate criteria, 30 days and two geese, which is now restrictive, 30 days and one goose, with 133,500 estimating breeding pairs. In other words, we seem to be at contrast here. You have a low number, so you put a moderate rating on it. Now you have a higher number, and you put a restrictive rating on it, and half the bag limit. That's the question that's being asked. So you're getting to that with the build up here. So keep rolling.
Okay, so the 88,000 and change, that number was the breeding pair estimate from the survey from this past June.
Okay.
The 130, whatever that
133
was.
133.5, yeah.
Yeah, yep. So that number, that's the IPM estimate for next year's breeding pair population. So that's the number that we plug into the harvest strategy and see what kind of bin we fall in, you know, which season package we fall in.
Okay.
So that fell into the moderate package, which is a 30-day season and two-bird daily bag, which is
Right.
Which is the same season we just had here recently.
Right.
But one of the things that happens at the various meetings, the Fish and Wildlife Service goes through the various, you know, states and countries, really is an international
sure.
kind of deal because we have Canada involved, is tend to look at all the data that's collected from these things. And
okay.
The reproductive or the productivity of this population of birds from this summer was pretty low. You know, it was really one. It wasn't. You know, 2018 is one I think the people that really follow this sticks out in their mind. You know,
right.
really late spring. You know, snow and ice on the ground up there until August, and you know, it was pretty much a complete bust as far
mm-hmm.
as breeding. And this past
mm-hmm.
summer wasn't anywhere near that. But it was one of the lower productivity estimates on
mm-hmm.
record. And
okay.
and that, and I think looking at the long-term trend of this population, just the people that make these decisions decided to act with a little bit of extra caution.
So let me cut to chase here. Even though you have more breeding geese, that doesn't mean you have more productivity. That means more geese can produce less eggs than less geese, depending on climate conditions.
Yeah, kind of every year is different, but
yeah.
But there really weren't more breeding pairs. The breeding pair estimate from the survey was lower than the year before. What was higher was the model's prediction for next year.
Ah, okay, got it.
So really, you know, you're looking at a number of breeding pairs that in the actual survey estimate is declining, and you had a year with relatively poor productivity. I think that's what really swayed a lot of folks, you know, inspiring to act with a little more caution than you know, it could have gone either way, I think. You know, it was a close decision, but I think... You hate to look back and think that you made a mistake. You know, boy, we really, if we would have restricted harvest in a certain year, you know, maybe that would have made a difference in the long term. The goal of these harvest strategies, I guess what I'm trying to say, these harvest strategies, is to have as much hunting opportunity as possible
sure.
over the long term.
Yep.
And you know... When you have times where the population is in a little bit of a downturn, and in this case, it's just mostly due to, you know, long stretch of relatively bad weather on the nesting grounds. You know,
right.
People, hunters tend to want to pin it all on harvest because that's what we see down here in our world.
Yeah.
You know, that's what's right in front of you. But
what's right in front of us is, you know, we got geese flying everywhere down here, and
why
are they cutting the numbers back? Because we've got more geese here. The midwinter survey shows, you know, more geese in the air, more geese on the water than it did in, you know, a couple of years, and we just can't put all this stuff together. But, you know, when you factor in the fact that these geese fly 1,500 miles north of Chestertown to, you know, build their nests and have their babies, and the conditions are a little bit different, some years are more productive than others, and you know, it's kind of an educated guess type of thing based on the available science.
I'd like to think it's a little more than a guess. You know, we have thankfully, you know, sort of this modern phase of goose management that
right.
sort of grew out of the work that our predecessors did in the late 90s and early 2000s. You know, we have going on 30 years of nesting ground banding and the
sure.
pair survey and all that information. But what a lot of folks, you know, I talk to, guys that have and ladies that have been around for a long time and been goose hunters for a long time, is a lot of them still remember the era prior to that, you know, and in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, there wasn't annual nesting ground banding. You know, there wasn't a breeding pair survey.
Right.
You know, there weren't these fancy mathematics that helped kind of put all this stuff together.
So it was more of an educated guess back in the day.
Yeah, for sure. And
well, I remember the total ban for 5 years. I mean, I remember I was at that meeting when that was announced, and it was just shocking. You know, the iconic Canada Goose on Maryland's Eastern Shore. You're going to close it down for 5 years? But we have had a rebound in the population, and the rebound in the hunting participation, what, 50,000 some waterfowl permits sold here in Maryland, something like that?
Yeah, around that, yep.
Yeah, so I mean, it is a popular endeavor. There's no question. And where else in the world can you go and have this kind of waterfowl hunting? I mean, you go to Saskatchewan if you want, but you know, not everybody has $8,000 to spend a week in Saskatchewan. So,
no, it's a real privilege to hunt in a place that has this much, you know, tradition and values. Not only geese, but waterfowl and
well, sure.
in general, you know.
Well, I mean, we have the, you know, we have the museums dedicated to decoy carving. We have, you know, the waterfowl festival here. We have, you know, how many different places are dedicated to waterfowl and the collectability of the decoys and the, you know, the guides and the whole thing. I mean, it's the whole mm-hmm. big giant your world. You know, your world is what it is.
No, it is. That's what I say. It's a privilege to be in it. Not, you know, for Caitlin and I, not only as hunters, but as biologists, and you know, it's a big responsibility, and we take it seriously and live it and breathe it 24/7 all year long. You know,
sure. I mean, I give our biologists here in Maryland all the credit in the world. We have the most science-based wildlife management in my estimation, in the country. With what we have to work with here in Little Maryland, we've got the tidal, we've got the freshwater, we've got the offshore stuff. You guys, all biologists in fisheries and wildlife, do the most difficult work with very small budgets, and you don't have to comment on that, with very small budgets and not a lot of support from the general population. I think hunters are something like 3% of the population of Maryland, and right. we've got to claw and dig for everything that we get to support our lifestyle. But what the other 97% of the people don't understand, and I mentioned this in the first hour, that hunters and anglers are the conservationists. We're the ones with our eyes on the water. We're our ones eyes on the sky, eyes on the land. We're the ones that can make those observations, let people know, and, you know, you guys do the great follow-up that you do, and I'm just a fan of the biologists. I, upper management, yeah, okay, politicians, anyway, you guys
are... Put us in the danger zone.
No, I'm not going to put you in the danger zone. I will tell people that there is legislation that they need to look at and comment on concerning goose hunting in Maryland. That's on the docket. One of the hearings is next week for Maryland. And, you know, I'm not asking you guys to comment because it's not your world. Your world is to boots on the ground stuff. But, you know, I just salute all of our biologists here in Maryland and the work that you do because of, you know, I'm not going to say I've been out in the field and spent hours with you guys, but I see what you do. I have been in the field on some occasions and seen what you do on very rare occasions, but I know the work that gets put into these things, you know, and the non-productive days that are spent and the days when, you know, you discover something that's really cool and it really helps your job and that type of thing and really helps the management of the sustainable species. So, you know, I'm with you guys. I really am. So
no, we appreciate
no problem at all. So mm-hmm. I appreciate you explaining that, and we do need to take another break here right now, and I will be back shortly after we talk about our friends at Spurry's Tire Service. I'll be talking about Spurry's in just a second because I set all my scripts down over here to take care of the dogs, and I like to have my cheat sheet in front of me when I talk about Spurry's. Good morning there, Brent. How are you this morning, buddy? Hope everything's going well. I'll be in to see you this week, no question about it. So Spurry's Tire Service, located at the corner of Dover and Elliott Roads, right here in Easton. I'll tell you, you pull in there, and every commercial vehicle in the Tri-County area is there. I don't care if the refrigeration or, you know, whether you're, it doesn't matter. There's a lot of commercial trucks that need sprays and depend on them for their tires, that's for sure. American-made Bridgestone and Firestone tires, any other tires that you need for your vehicle from the smallest to the largest, commercial vehicles, RVs, trailers, ATVs. If it has a tire on it, Spurs can fix it or repair it or order you a new one. There's no question. Your garden tractor, your farm tractors. And, you know, with the planting season coming up and all the things that farmers do to prepare the fields, Spurs mobile service will be available to head to your farm and take care of whatever's going on with your tires on your equipment. No question at all. Tire repair, full service automotive repair. When one of those dreaded engine lights come on, like the little wrench or the check engine or whatever else comes on your dashboard, when it lights up and it's not supposed to be there, Spurs can diagnose it and repair your vehicle. No question at all. They have a 24-hour truck service. All that and more has kept Spurs customers, including Robin and me, and I am a customer, and our families are customers, satisfied for over 30 years. Stop by, no appointment needed for tires. Give Spurrier's Tire Service in Easton a call at 410-822-7384. The website is spurrierstire.com, 822-7384. Even though you don't need an appointment for tires, sometimes you need to make one on your end, 822-7384. Morning, Brent. You all have a great day, and Spurrier's Tire Service will take care of anything you need. We'll be right back.
Nothing is more frustrating than a dead battery. When your truck won't start or your boat or ATV leaves you stranded far from home, that's not good. The solution is Battery Warehouse. Not only does Battery Warehouse provide batteries for your car or truck, you can find marine batteries for cranking or trolling, ATV batteries, tractor batteries, motorcycle batteries, and batteries for all outdoors equipment. Did you know Battery Warehouse has batteries for wild game feeders, dog collars, cell phones, predator calls, and trail cameras? How about your video camera? Or if you tow your boat or trailer, your trailer brake control battery. Any battery you need. Battery Warehouse, convenient to you. Bel Air, Frederick, Glen Burnie, Dundalk, Hagerstown, Westminster, Eldersburg, Parkville. Visit BatteryWarehouseMaryland.com online for the phone numbers and more information. When you need a hot flash, get to the Battery Warehouse near you.
Hey, if you know a lot about guns or not much and want to learn, Bel Air Gun Range provides a place to shoot, practice, and learn in a family-friendly environment. And you can make your selection from the showroom when you're ready to own a firearm. At Bel Air Gun Range, the public indoor gun range is open 7 days a week with no membership fee required. Rental firearms are on hand. Bel Air Gun Range memberships are available to individuals, couples, and families on an annual basis. Bel Air Gun Range stocks handguns, rifles, and shotguns for shooting sports, competition, hunting, and home protection. Ammunition, too. Bel Air Gun Range buys, consigns, sells, and transfers new and used firearms. Bel Air Gun Range offers personal firearms classes with an NRA-certified instructor. HQL handgun qualification license courses can be taken in a group or virtually from the convenience of your home. For more details about Bel Air Gun Range services, sales, and classes, stop by 2137 North Fountain Green Road in Bel Air, Maryland, or visit the website belairgunrange.com. Call 410-399-9518. That's 399-9518. Be safe, shoot, and have fun at Bel Air Gun Range.
Madonna Seafood is known for having the best crabs and seafood in Harford County. Madonna Seafood is just a quick scenic trip from Baltimore up to Laney Valley Road. Now, Madonna Seafood Carryout has delicious steamed crabs by the dozen to the bushel, great seafood, pizza, subs, Fisher's popcorn, and a whole lot more. Call into the carryout at 410-557-2722. That's 410-557-CRAB. Madonna Seafood Restaurant is a full-service casual dining restaurant with all-you-can-eat crabs in a quiet atmosphere with an extensive menu. Take exit 27B off the 695 Beltway. That's Delaney Valley Road North, Route 146. Turn left on Norrisville Road, and you've arrived at Madonna Seafood. Madonna Seafood, year-round crabs. 4105 Norrisville Road in Whitehall, Maryland. Madonna Seafood is open at 11 a.m. and closed Mondays. 410-557-CRAB, 2722, madonnaseafood.com.
Alan Ellis here for Mil-Spec Brayon Truckliners.
MilSpec spray-on truck bedliners provide unmatched protection for your vehicle with the toughest bedliners on the market, and MilSpec liners support veterans and military families. Whether you're a hunter, a crabber, an angler, a contractor, a farmer, waterman, a weekend warrior, your MilSpec liner with a nationwide lifetime warranty protects your truck bed from scrapes and impacts no matter what your gear, tree stands, tackle box, crab pots, any kind of tools. Have your MilSpec liner installed at Maryland Spray Linings. That's just off Security Boulevard, 2076 Lord Baltimore Drive in Windsor Mill. Call Jack Carver at 410-455-0800. That's 455-0800. Superior Linings and Truck Accessories, located off Ritchie Highway at 81 Dover Road in Glen Burnie. Call Bobby Hawkins at 410-789-0199. That's 789-0199. These MilSpec liner dealers can install any truck accessories, tonneau covers, step bars, toolboxes, truck hitches, and more. Schedule your appointment to have your truck protected with a MilSpec liner today.
Baltimore is listening to Talk Radio 680 WCBM and 99.9 FM in Harford County. And now, back to the Outdoorsman Radio Show with Alan and Robin Ellis.
Thank you for the coronation there, folks. Appreciate that. All right, we have our winners for the tickets today. Previous callers who got put into the random number generator. And those winners are Alan Deans and Mike Morgan. We'll be calling our listeners and getting their addresses and sending those tickets out ASAP. All right, we're back with our guests, Josh and Kayla. Good morning. Again, listen, I had a caller off the air ask a question about the avian influenza.
Okay.
Wild turkeys, any effect?
Yes, wild turkeys, it's kind of strange in that how it's...
I know that's Bob's area, you know, end of the piano, but go ahead with wild turkeys. They're strange.
Yeah, no, that's okay. There hasn't been much evidence that avian influenza affects wild turkeys, you know, which is just a little strange in how strongly it affects domestic poultry, you know,
right.
Chickens and domestic turkeys too, you know.
Sure. I've heard of turkey farms being shut down. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, so it's a great thing, you know, that it doesn't seem to affect them very strongly, or at least there's no evidence that it does. But there is, Bob Long is our wild turkey biologist, and he's involved in a six-state research project on wild turkeys,
right?
Banding gobblers, putting some telemetry units out on hens, and they're also taking some samples and testing those birds for avian influenza and a variety of other diseases too. So, you know, maybe more to come on that. Would be the answer, but as of right now, not really seeing anything too dire with turkeys.
Right. Well, wild turkeys do have some issues on their own in their population. There are some other things that affect the wild turkeys rather than the avian influenza. So, and maybe it's simply because of their lifestyle. Maybe they don't have as close proximity as, you know, chickens in a chicken house or, you know, even a flock of snow geese, 1,000 snow geese in one flock in one field. So,
right. That's kind of what, you know, the conversations Bob and I have had about it, because it is, you know, it's something we worry about, and it is kind of, I mean, like I said, we're very, very glad, but
Sure.
But yeah, you know, they're not typically interacting as much with waterfowl and the dormant carriers, so this disease, although you would think, particularly on Delmarva, they'd have enough interaction that if they were going to contract the virus and it was going to be an issue, that would have happened, you know.
Right.
So
here,
we're not saying that.
Here's a question on email from Michael. What is the estimate of AP geese in Maryland this winter? I believe it was, that was where I was going to go. We have a few minutes left to talk about the midwinter survey. Said I started hunting in 68, and the estimate around then peaked at 600,000. The model estimate of breeding pairs could be explained again. Is the 133,000 pairs the estimate for this summer of 2025?
Right, that was the model's prediction of how many breeding pairs
for the upcoming breeding
for the
nesting
year.
Season.
So it's predicting, you know, estimate of mortality from, and of course this was before hunting season. You know, plug in a number, kind of an estimate. Well, this is about how many are going to get shot. You know,
right.
under a a 30-2 season and that sort of thing.
Okay.
And natural mortality and, you know, so forth and so on. There's some unknowns in there. But when you have these long data sets, it helps you try to make these predictions.
Got it. Got it. And the number in the midwinter survey of AP geese?
Yeah, so I don't have that right in front of me, but it was
Canada geese, it was 414,000.
414,000 Canada geese.
The waterfowl biologist has that.
Yeah, well, the waterfowl biologist better have that number. So
Right.
And our waterfowl numbers overall were up this year, correct?
Correct, for most things. That number is the number of Canada geese that we saw. It's not necessarily the number
all
of
the AP
Canada, because, we have these multiple groups wintering, on Delmarva. We have our resident geese. With this cold weather we had, we have a lot of birds getting pushed south. You'll see resident geese from New York and PA and New Jersey and places like that pushed south, too. So you have several different populations of birds.
Okay.
Kind of getting squished together in a relatively small area.
Yeah, Delmarva is the number one spot in the flyway to show up for your best odds of success on Canada geese. So, I'm sorry we didn't get to the resident versus AP situation, but we're just flat out of time. So at this point, guys, Kayla and Josh, I want to thank you for being on the Outdoors and Radio Show. We appreciate all the information, and you're certainly welcome back anytime. Maybe after we get all the data in the summertime, you could give us an update and maybe have some good news for 2026-27 season.
Yeah, we're always hoping that. I sure hope so. And, we'd be glad to come on again. It was a pleasure talking with you. And
nice talking to you.
The opportunity.
Okay, well, thank you, Kayla. No problem at all. Appreciate you guys. We'll let you go. And we thank you for your great conversation today. We're about out of time, folks. I don't have much time to tell you about one more time about our friends at Backyard Billy's, but I think you should check them out. The website is up and running. If it's heat you need or anything for your backyard or any kind of shed or storage, greenhouses or any stuff like that coming up for the spring that you're considering, stop by there. Place at right off Route 50, exit 44B, Evans Avenue in Graysonville, or give them a call, 410-827-4500, after you check out the website. Same thing with Clyde Sports Shop, your full-line Browning dealer. They have great supplies for hunting and fishing. Fishing season's right around the corner. Stop by, get your license, see what's new for 2025. And don't forget about their sale at Clyde Sports Shop, March 14th through March 23rd. Rods, reels, tackle, terminal tackle, everything for panfish, for perch, for trout, at phone number 410-242-6108, 2307 Hammonds Ferry Road in Lansdowne, just off Beltway exit number 9, 410-242-6108. ClydeSportsShop.com is the website, open 7 days a week. So there we are. We want to thank you for joining us this morning. We want to thank our guest again. Hope we answered most of the questions that we got. And there's, I'll say hey to Robin, John B., appreciate that. And Aaron, I appreciate your updates. We'll get a hold of the winners. And and Lee puts a pin in it right here at the end. I'll stick to deer hunting. give you a chuckle here at the end of the show. There's the music, folks. Get out, stay safe. In every way. Love your family. Love the Lord. We'll see you next week.